Coming down in 3, 2, and 1.
Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and the cosmos. We're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. And that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world, so keep it tuned right here. And yes, it's true, I just got back from an adventure 2 weeks or so in Arizona. I'm still worn out and sleep-deprived, and you know what? I am actually drinking right now on the air, Sam.
Uh-oh.
I'm holding in my hand a beverage that I have only seen here in Puerto Rico, and I kid you not, it is called cannabis energy drink.
Oh, that's so weird. Look at Shelly, right? You can verify. No, it's not the same one. I'm wearing a toboggan. It's Canna Energy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it's got a nice, beautiful little cannabis leaf on it. It says hemp energy beverage. And this is not the first time I have drank this.
Ooh. rebel you.
And I just bought it at a gas station. And so, at first, when I first bought this thing, I was driving, and I thought, maybe I shouldn't drink this, because I don't know, is this going to make me high or something? Turns out it doesn't make you high, but it does give you a nice boost of energy. So this would be a huge hit in Asheville. Whoever is in charge of distributing energy drinks in Asheville needs to jump on this. I think they make it in, like, Austria. Yeah, Austria.
That's where Red Bull is made.
I don't know that I've ever had an energy drink.
Oh, my goodness.
Shelly,
our little
Shelly
is so pure.
Yeah. I don't think I have. Or maybe I tried Red Bull one time but just didn't really like it or... I don't know.
Well, they don't have most of them don't have the best taste, you know.
Then why drink them? I mean, other than the energy part,
the whole point, Shelly.
Can't we have energy and taste? What's so hard about that?
I'm surprised this isn't where you plug your new energy drink. Why are you not tapping this market?
I'm being generous. I'm passing along this wisdom to the rest of the world. Let me tell you a bit about the experiences that I had in Arizona, this strange land full of UFOs and vortexes and ancient Indian battlegrounds. You know, I mentioned earlier in the show, when we actually made it into Arizona, I was a speaker at the International UFO Congress, the largest UFO event in the entire world, attended by thousands of people, and it was a bit of a grueling process to get there. My first airplane flight was canceled, and then, you know, when I got finally on another flight the next day, there was a long layover. And I just want to include this. By the time I got to the resort and casino where they were holding this event, it was pretty darn late at night. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. Because this was a drive outside of Phoenix. So by the time I got in Phoenix and I got the shuttle and then I went to the event, I was hungry. It was late at night. The only thing that was open was this deli in the casino. And So before Lauren and I went to the casino, I had some wishing machines there with me, and I said, check this out. And I set up one of the machines to do well and win money in the casino. So we go down, we walk over to the building where the casino is. I walk in, go to the first machine that I saw. I put a $20 bill in the machine. I hit the button three times, and I hit a $1,200 jackpot.
Oh, my God.
What? Swear, it's one of those things. Swear, hand to God on a stack of Bibles. I know you're not supposed to say that, but when it comes to the wishing machine, I have to say it all the time because these stories are so unbelievable. Yes, I have the tax document to prove it. And if anybody from the IRS is listening, that goes on to the 2015 taxes now. but, yeah, they had to come out, and, you know, it was one of those deals where they shut the machine down, and I had to fill out paperwork and tax stuff. So, yes, that was as soon as I walked in, I hit it. And I just have to say that because, again, it just demonstrates the absolutely eerie power of the wishing machine. And if you don't know what a wishing machine is, go to wishingmachineproject.com and learn about it. So when I did my talk there, which was about the Brown Mountain Lights and abductions, speaking of wishing machines, we even had a table set up outside where we had a selection of wishing machines to sell. We were absolutely mobbed by people. In fact, I'm going to have a picture at speakingofstrange.com that shows you what our table looked like. It was just – it was insanity. But we had a very, very positive, warm, enthusiastic reception from all the people at the UFO Congress. And one thing I want to tell all of you about, however, was one of the highlights of this event, and that was being able to sit there in the audience – just a few rows back from the stage where Bob Lazar was talking. And this is the first time, apparently in decades, first time ever, that Bob Lazar has actually gone onto a stage in front of a crowd like this and told his story. He was being interviewed on stage by George Knapp, who hosts Coast to Coast AM usually on Sunday nights. And you probably know who Bob Lazar is already. If not, I'll just tell you that he came out as a whistleblower, and I'm thinking the early 1990s, something like that, because he claimed that he was a physicist who was hired to work at what we now call Area 51 between 1988 and 1989. And there's a lot of controversy about his story. His story's been out there for a long time, but to hear him tell it in his own words was just a wonderful experience. The guy seemed so genuine that I kept joking around because this was on the night that the Academy Awards were going to air, and I said, if this guy is full of it, then he deserves the Academy Award because he was that believable. And so let me just tell you some of the highlights that sort of struck me. He talked about how that they took him into a facility there around Groom Lake, and eventually they brought him into a room with another physicist who was supposed to be his buddy, as they would call them, his partner to work on projects. And the physicist that he was with said, okay, let me show you what we are supposed to work on. And he took out what essentially is an engine to one of these UFOs. He called it a reactor. Now, here's how he described it. The reactor was rather small. I would say, based upon the way he described it, he did a little sketch. It's about the size of two pizza boxes stacked together. So maybe, you know, a foot and a half to 2 feet square. And on top of it was a dome that was about half the size of a basketball. And the other physicist says to Bob Lazar, okay, walk up to this thing and try to touch the dome. And so Lazar walks over, and he puts his hands down. And when his hands got about 6 inches from the dome, his hands could not go any further. He said there was a force field around it, and he likened it to the sensation you might get if you're trying to force two magnets together via their like poles, like two north poles or two south poles. So Lazar is saying, this is crazy. Why can't I get my hands closer to it? And the physicist tells him, because it's generating some kind of artificial gravitational field, which, if you know anything about physics, that is huge. That's mind-boggling. We have no idea really exactly what gravity is, not to mention the idea that you could generate it artificially. Furthermore, he was shown a demonstration where they took a candle and lit it and put it near this thing, and then he looked at the candle and said that the flame of the candle looked as if it were frozen, as if it were just some kind of a picture of a candle flame. And that is because the gravitational field that was being produced by this reactor was manipulating or distorting time, which goes right back to everything we've ever heard about how gravity and time are somehow related and interact. So he's having his mind blown by all this, and he says, well, what are we supposed to do here? And they tell him, our job is not to figure out how this works necessarily, but just to make another one. They want us to make another one. This reactor had been taken from at least one of these craft that had crashed. Lazar said that he saw at least about three of these saucers that were there in this kind of hangar where he was working. And at one point, he actually got to go out and watch one of these things be tested. And he said that it was just a beautiful craft, a very, very shiny, perfect metallic form, was practically noiseless. And at one point, he got to go into the craft. He said he thought it was funny because there was actually like little furniture and stuff in there. But the thing that stands out in his mind about how it was formed on the inside was he said everything was so smooth. There was not one real linear edge. He said you could almost imagine as if somebody had made the whole thing out of wax and then heated it up and then the whole thing kind of melted. He said it was so smooth. It was like it was the whole thing came out of an injection mold. Just a beautiful, beautiful structure. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you a little bit more about what Bob Lazar said about being there at Area 51 and seeing what they're working on there. And what aliens actually do look like when they are truly autopsied. And then I'll tell you about what happened when I went to Sedona and explored a vortex. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You can call them at 828-298-5402. And speaking of strange, we'll be right back.
Blue skies from pain. Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Africa, the desert is a very strange place. Rattlesnakes, scorpions, blistering hot during the day, freezing cold at night. The wind will almost knock you over. Bones of humans and animals. Vortexes of energy. Old hidden gold mines. Ghosts of battles long, long past. And sometimes it's so quiet. So absolutely deadly quiet that you'd swear that you have slipped out of this realm into some other place. That's why they call the mountains there in Arizona the Superstition Mountains. And that's why you have so many experiences when you're traveling in that part of the world. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. I just got back from my latest trip to Arizona, 2 weeks there. And I'm telling all of you about some of the things that I experienced. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina. And the number at Wright's is 828-298-5402. 828-298-5402. People find coins and arrowheads and old guns and all kinds of things in the middle of the desert that have just been sitting there, laying there, propped up there for a long, long time. And I was talking about getting to sit in the audience live and listen to Bob Lazar tell his story about being in Area 51 in Nevada, out there in the desert. And he said that he never really believes he got to see an alien. He said he did see a figure at one point that could have been an alien, but he thought instead it was some kind of a dummy or a doll that he glimpsed that they were doing some experiments with. But nonetheless, he said he was shown photographs, official government photographs, of a real alien body being autopsied. He said it looked very much, you know, just like the typical gray-type aliens that we're all familiar with. But he said the weirdest thing was that here was this alien lying there with its abdomen split open in a T shape. And it appeared, and he was told, that the alien being only had one big internal organ. That unlike we humans, who have, you know, hearts and lungs and kidneys and a liver and a gallbladder and all that. He said that it was almost like these beings had evolved to a point where all of that had formed into just one organ that would take care of all functions. How strange is that? And also he said that when you were inside the craft that they had taken, crashed UFO, there wasn't some kind of obvious control panel with all these buttons and levers and steering wheels. That it was the same old thing you've heard before, as if there was a panel that they could perhaps place their hands on and just seamlessly connect their consciousness and will with the technology, with the craft, so that it would fly around. So a beautiful connection there between the will of the pilot and the mechanics and dynamics of the machine. Well, if you don't know the whole story of Bob Lazar, you can just look up his name. Last name is Lazar. He ended up getting more or less fired from Area 51 over some personal issues, and he was irresponsible afterward. He got to the point where he started taking his friends out at certain times of night when he knew they'd be test flying craft and having little viewing parties. Until finally he got caught, and that's when he decided to go public before that he got potentially killed. But it was really interesting, I must say. I've heard his story for decades, and But to sit right there and to hear the words come out of his mouth were quite convincing. And I think the guy is as truthful as you could hope for. I also mentioned earlier in the show, I was on numerous occasions around Travis Walton. Travis Walton is a rather tall fellow. I did not talk directly to Travis Walton. It was one of those odd things. I just never knew exactly what to say. I mean, I didn't want to come across again like, hey, nice to meet you. Happy to hear you were abducted. So I don't know. You know, it was just it was a very surreal experience, though, to be in person around some of these figures. And so the UFO Congress was a big success. And in fact, if you go to UFOCongress.com, you can buy DVDs of a lot of the programs there. You can buy the Bob Lazar DVD. You can buy a DVD of my program. I don't get any money from that. But it's just, you know, one of those things you agree to. You agree to go and to do a talk and to let them record it, and they make money off of it. But they also do a very nice job, you know, with their speakers and arranging to get them out there to do it. So that said, let's move along. After I was done there at Scottsdale, where we had the UFO Congress, well, then I went to Sedona. Now, Sedona is a higher elevation. It's about 4,000 feet in elevation, so it was much cooler in Sedona. There was a fantastic experience. I presented a workshop there in Sedona at the Sedona Creative Life Center, and it was my first ever wishing machine workshop. And I promised it would be a small, intimate group, and it was, and everybody had a fantastic time. What a wonderful selection of people. I just want to give you quickly some of the things that I was told there at the workshop. There was a woman there, and I won't give too much personal information now, a woman there named Joyce, who said that she had gotten a wishing machine because she wanted to get money for a business project she wanted off the ground. So she said that she had no idea how this money was going to materialize, and she used the wishing machine, and not only did she get the money, but she got, I think she said, 20 times more than she'd been asking for, and she was really excited about wishing machines. And has even ordered more since then. There was another woman there named Robin who said that she wanted to get involved with the TV business and that she used her wishing machine for that, and 5 days later she had a contract to work on a TV show. There was another woman there named Sue who said that she wanted to buy a new house, and her financing had fallen through with the bank, and she used the wishing machine, and through an alternative source, the financing came through. And it just goes on and on and on. It was really wonderful to sit there and hear all these stories from people who have had enormous successes using the wishing machine. So that was a lot of fun. Also, while I was in Sedona, of course, after the wishing machine was workshop was done, I decided to take a hike and to go to one of the vortexes. Now, of course, a vortex is kind of a nebulous thing. It's something that is really psychically defined. There's supposedly no way you can scientifically measure what a vortex is, but essentially they are supposed to be places on planet Earth where Earth and bioenergies sort of either travel into or out of the planet. And so you get vortexes that are supposed to be swirling masses of energy, and they are either considered electric or magnetic. Now, those terms do not have any relationship to the scientific usage of electric or magnetic. They claim that electric means energy is coming out of the Earth, and magnetic means that energy is going into the Earth. Well, Lauren and I found this vortex on a map called the Boynton Canyon Vortex, which many consider the most powerful vortex in Sedona. It was a bit of a hike to get there. When we come back from this break, I'm going to tell you what happened when we hiked to the Boynton Canyon Vortex out there in the middle of the desert, hardly anybody else around. And, yes, something very weird did occur. This is the program where we talk about the weird, the extraordinary, the remarkable. It's called Speaking of Strange. It's brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. My name is Joshua P. Warren, and I'll tell you about my Vortex experience when we come back right after this. Yes, it is the program where the unusual becomes usual, keeping you company tonight, Speaking of Strange. And this evening's broadcast is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. Remember, you can go to speakingofstrange.com for a link to Wright's Coin Shop, and that's the place where your money becomes more money. And who couldn't use more money right now, huh? So I'm talking about my recent experience in Arizona. Spent 2 weeks there running around and having adventures, and boy, I'm just hitting some of the highlights here. But vortexes, again, they are these places that are kind of like channels for Earth energy. And scientifically, they can't quite be measured, but psychics say they can sense them very easily. And there are quite a few around Western North Carolina as well. So here, Larnie and I found this place called the Boynton Canyon Vortex on a map. And it's surprising in Sedona how easily you can find vortexes listed on maps. So we hiked a good ways on a trail through the desert on a rather cold, blustery day. And finally walked upon this particular vortex site. And at first, neither one of us felt anything special. But, you know, at this point, you know, we're kind of out of breath. I mean, we've been hiking over some rough terrain. So we sat down and relaxed for a minute. And that was when the first thing happened. Both Lauren and I independently started having a weird sensation. And at first I felt like, man, did I just overexert myself? And I didn't know she was feeling the same way, because when we looked up at this vortex, there was a bit of a disorienting feeling. Here's how I would describe it. It's kind of like when you look at some of these spiral-shaped optical illusions for a minute, and then you look away, and it appears as if everything is kind of shifting a little bit around you. There was honestly this kind of sense that I was a little off balance, like I'd been spinning. And I thought, well, could this just be my imagination? Because, you know, you think vortex, you know, it would make sense that you could fool yourself into to feeling that way. So that's completely subjective, and I can't tell you anything more about the reality of that than my own experience. But here was a thing that I thought was really weird. Lauren is really big on taking pictures and video and stuff like that. And knowing that we were going to a vortex, she had her phone fully charged up. And throughout the entire course of the hike, she had only taken maybe a couple pictures. So we got there at the vortex, and I said, well, okay, Lauren, why don't you shoot a little video of me just, you know, saying, here's the vortex, describing what's going on. Maybe this is something interesting that we can put on YouTube. And so she turns her phone on, and she goes, what the hell? Her battery had gone from full charged all the way down to less than 5%, and we were able to get just a couple of pictures taken, and then her phone died. And that was pretty weird. So I took my phone out, and my phone battery had drained significantly, but not as much as hers. So I did continue taking some pictures, but I didn't get anything weird. But what I can tell you about the vortex is we were only there for about maybe 20 minutes before we decided to turn around and head back because it looked like there was rain coming in. But subjectively, you know, the experience of being kind of disoriented is something that, again, I can't express in a scientific fashion. But the fact that the battery on the phone drained like it did, that was pretty wild. Also, while I was in Sedona, I met with a number of really interesting people. In fact, some people I met are craftspeople who create some really interesting products. And whenever I travel around, I'm always on the lookout for good, rare, interesting products that I can bring back and share with the audience. I like to sell things that are really special, and I'm not prepared to talk about that yet, but pretty soon in the near future I will be. I'll tell you about some of the cool stuff that I found there. I also want to mention along those lines that I was going to different shops in Sedona, and this is just one of those weirdo kind of off-kilter things. I went into a shop that had a bunch of crystals and magical stuff, and I expected the person working at the counter to look like Shelley Wright, you know. But instead, it was a man, a middle-aged man, wearing a green foam nose, like a clown would wear, and like long green fabric tendrils hanging from a wrap on his head. He looked like some kind of a twisted clown. All right. And I noticed that all these customers are just going up to him and talking to him just as normally as can be. Nobody's saying anything to him like, why are you dressed as a clown? So being the curious kind, I figure, well, when I get my opportunity to talk to this man, I'm going to ask him what the hell's going on here. And so finally, Lauren found something she was interested in. She's talking to the guy at the counter. So I woke up and I start talking to him and I say, so why are you wearing a foam nose? And he says, oh, well, because I'm the village idiot. And I just laughed. Of course. I don't know what the hell he was talking about. And then he starts laughing and he goes, actually, he says, I am the clown archetype. And he gives us this sort of 5-minute spiel about the significance of the clown archetype throughout mystical history and how the, you know, like the Joker or the Jester in a deck of cards represents zero and how it's a very sacred starting point for all mindsets and philosophies. And then he says to me that he identifies the clown archetype within me as well. And so suddenly I'm transformed on this spiritual journey to discover that I'm the clown archetype. What do you think of that, Sam?
The clown archetype. It sounds like a dream that you have just, you're just telling us, like, and then, you know, it was after I drank my cannabis energy drink.
Yeah.
I saw the clown archetype. What don't you understand about this?
Yeah. And it's one of those, I'm feeling like, you know, the Joe Pesci, what do you mean I'm funny? You know, am I ha-ha funny? Am I clown to you? What do you mean I'm funny? So that was weird. But all that said, we finally, we wrapped up the stuff that we needed to do there in Sedona and decided to head to Flagstaff. Now, Flagstaff, Arizona is 7,000 feet in elevation. So since we're broadcasting from western North Carolina, I'll just point out that the highest peak east of the Mississippi is Mount Mitchell. And Mount Mitchell is not 7,000 feet tall. It's something like 6,684, something like that. So Flagstaff, Arizona had snow on the ground. They'd just gotten 10 inches of snow like hours before we got there. And it was down in the teens. So it was a very strange. You know, you go to Phoenix where it's nice and warm and you can run around and in your short sleeve shirt and your shorts if you want. And then, you know, you head up, you drive 2 hours to Flagstaff and it's, you know, winter time, big time. So there in Flagstaff, we started walking around and we went into this odd shop, another odd shop, where the guy there was a musician in charge of the shop. And he had created something that every man needs, you and I definitely included in this, Sam. He had converted an entire bed into a musical instrument. So it was pretty much like a wooden box that you would lay down on top of, and it had strings on one side, and it had a section you could hit and bang like a drum on the other side, and the guy would just sit there, and you'd lay down, he'd stroke these strings that would play this interesting set of octaves as he would sing, and it was called an aura massage.
Again, sounds like a dream that you're you're manifesting into a story.
Yes.
And on this bed of massaging music, there was a clown archetype.
So we're lying there one at a time, and this guy is singing in this high-pitched tone, and he's strumming these chords, and I mean, it really was, you know, transporting us into some other type of mindset. And then we left there and we went to Bigfoot Barbecue, which was right down the street. Literally, a place called Bigfoot Barbecue. So
he was playing a banjo.
So when we come back from this break, I want to tell you what happened when we went to, after this, that evening, the Lowell Observatory, which is up on the top of a mountain overlooking Flagstaff. This is the observatory that Time magazine calls one of the most 100 important places on Earth, where they discovered the planet Pluto, where they discovered the universe is expanding. And I will tell you what I learned there about not just astronomy, but also astrology. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
And then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and they use them to help us. Take
the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And mind you, next hour we call the Dark 30 Hour. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. That's going to be the hour of the show when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff. More sordid and seedy, and, well, you can determine for yourself whether or not you want to stick around for that. Getting back to my trip in Arizona, the Lowell Observatory is one of the most important places in the world, according to Time magazine. Here we were up there on this mountain overlooking Flagstaff at night, cold, dark, windy peak, looking through telescopes, and I'm not talking about some electronic thing. I mean looking through optical telescopes at Jupiter, looking at the Orion Nebula, looking at the moon. And this place is so significant because this is where Pluto was discovered. It's really fascinating to think about just the history in general of the Lowell Observatory, and that's because it was created by Percival Lowell. He lived 1855 to 1916. He was an American businessman and author and astronomer and whatnot. And he created the observatory because he believed there was life on Mars. And he was looking for evidence of the canals on Mars that he thought were the evidence of life. Well, of course, he never found that. But about 15 years later is when another astronomer named Claude Tombaugh discovered Pluto. And then another astronomer named Slipher discovered between 1912 and 1914, working up there, what they call the large recessional velocities of galaxies. And ultimately what that means is he discovered that the universe is expanding. So it's a very significant place. And so here we were. Up there, looking through these telescopes, going to shows at the planetarium. And at one point, we were inside their presentation room watching a show about the constellations. And the astronomer who was giving the show said to our very small group, again, less than 10 people, said, "Do you know that whatever you think your astrological sign is wrong?" And everybody goes, "Huh?" And he goes, "Yep." He goes, "I grew up thinking I was a Taurus my whole life. But if you actually go back and look," and he had this big graphic where all the planets and stars are all zipping around, and he goes back to the date and time when he was born, which was like 1991. he goes back, and you see that he was, like an Aries or something. And so he goes, "Yep." He says, "This is why astrology is wrong." And he says, "Anybody else want to try out their birthday?" So I said, "Well, let me try out my birthday." So I have always been told I'm a Scorpio, right? So he goes in and he punches in my birthday and my birth time, and it goes, and it zips around, and he goes, "Oh, no, you're really a Virgo." And I go, "What?" And so all these people in the crowd are getting their birthdays plugged in, and it's zipping around, and showing that no, it's all wrong. And they're pretty much just like poo-pooing everything you've ever thought about astrology. So after this, I thought I'd heard something about a controversy related to astronomy and astrology and these types of measurements. And I got online and I started researching, and I found this article from CNN. And the article headline is, "No, Your Zodiac Hasn't Changed." And they start talking about how that there are people who are claiming that your zodiac sign is completely off for the same reason this astronomer was saying. But the article says, before astrology fans scrape the ink from their arms, because they're talking about people who have like a tattoo of their sign, they should consider this. If they adhere to the tropical zodiac, which if they're a Westerner, they probably did, absolutely nothing has changed. So what that means is there are actually two ways of getting your astrological sign. There's the tropical zodiac, which is fixed to seasons, and that's what Western astrology adheres to. And that differs from what they call sidereal zodiac, which is fixed to constellations and followed in the East. And one astrologer says, yeah, this pops up from time to time. But basically, it says, sure enough, what we're not talking about your astrological sign in terms of the stars. We're talking about your astrological sign in terms of the seasons. It says, in the Western world, the seasonal-based astrology has not changed, was never oriented to the constellations, and has been the same for 2,000 years. So, yes, I'm still a Scorpio, and if you ever hear this yourself, now you'll know the difference. If you were born in the Western world, that's different than the constellation base that the East would use. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it'll be time for the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.